I suppose I walked straight into that one. It's possible. I am not sure how easy it would be to convince the director to part with food, though. It's been 300 years, but we still keep very close stock of our supplies. The floor passed to the next delegate, and talks continued. Nitsatulin passed on her turn to speak, and Olan Karas said he had nothing to add. His planet's population was quite small, he admitted, and he had mostly come so that his government would have an accurate report about what had happened at the summit. Padme accepted that with aplomb, and then it was Tobruna's turn to speak. "Kreeling's problems are of a slightly more serious nature, I'm afraid," he began. "While we understand that the sector is famous for creation above all other things, it is we who are charged with the production of a key raw material. An outdated treaty requires us to sell to Naboo and the other planets in the sector first, at a fixed price, which means they always get the highest quality ores at below market prices. By the time our merchants are able to go out into the galaxy, they only have inferior material left." They all had to be very careful with their answers to this one. It was one thing to promise support for a community of artists, and another entirely to speak quickly of a planet's primary economic means, even at this early stage when no one was making any official promises. "I know why you hesitate, Your Highness," Tobruna said. "We watched the election coverage, and we know that you pride yourself on your compassion. I know that you would like to offer the easy solution immediately, and I will not press you for any trade proposals today, or even tomorrow. We appreciate your understanding and your generous read of our character," she said. "You are correct. We thank you for the time to consider our response." Tobruna bowed and took his seat. This gave Padme a few more moments to think about what she was going to say. "Is Naboo your primary market?" she asked. "And do we require all of your high-quality ore?" "You are," Tobruna said. "We use the ore for shipbuilding," Bibble said, consulting his notes. "Most of it, anyway. The rest goes to musical instrument manufacture." "Does that require high quality?" Amidala asked. No one knew, and so Padme risked a look at Sabe. They made eye contact, and Sabe minutely shook her head. "One of my companions is an accomplished Halixet player," Amidala said. "Sabe, can you tell us?" "Your Highness," Sabe bent slightly at the knee. It was the first time Padme had ever called on a handmaiden for advice when they were in company. "From my experience, the high-quality ore is not necessary. The glint of the ore is fashionable, but not required." Yane coughed quietly and adjusted her hood over her face before returning her hand to her side. Padme remembered that within days of her handmaidens appearing in court with their heads covered, the particular handmaiden style had become a planet-wide trend. "That might not actually be so hard to change," Amidala said. "Especially if we convince up-and-coming musicians that a less glinty instrument is favored by the palace." Tobruna grinned. "I would not have thought of that," he said. "I look forward to seeing your solutions to the pricing issues, if they will be similarly creative." "It is only a very preliminary stance, of course," Amidala said. "But we must all start from somewhere." Governor Kelma had the last spot this morning. "I know Naboo is facing its own labor shortage," she began. "But Carlinus is in similar straits. We have plenty of people coming in to do the regular year-round work, but it's the seasonal jobs that are suffering. They pay just as well, but it's hard to convince someone to move all the way out here if you can't promise them regular work. The people we want to hire from Naboo are ones you wouldn't miss, Your Highness," Kelma continued. "They're the young students right out of school who haven't decided which apprenticeship they want to take or what craft they want to dedicate themselves to. And we could use them. They'd be well paid, and when they returned, they'd be able to set themselves up pretty much any way they wanted to." "My mother did that on Carlinus," Padme mused. It had actually been Sola, her sister. But there were few enough students who made the trip now that if she'd specified a young person, Someone might figure out who she was. She always speaks highly of it. I know it was a good tradition, and I hope we can resurrect it. If you can, Kelma said, then we can talk about grain. Padme nodded, and Bibble took that as his cue to end proceedings for the day. As she suspected, they had solved almost nothing, but at least they were all talking, which was the start she had hoped for. It was amazing to watch, Senator. Panaka hadn't been expecting Palpatine's call, but when the Senator surprised him early in the evening of the first day of the summit, he was more than happy to take the call. To watch her talk with the others and really listen, and to make progress, even if it was only the very beginning of mending the fences. Her handmaidens even offered advice. What an amazing accomplishment, Palpatine said. I hope she didn't get too dramatic and promise them voting rights in the next election. Panaka laughed. You know, I get the feeling she respects their sovereignty too much to do that, he said. That's what made her so effective, I think. She wasn't the queen today. She was simply their host. A united Chamal sector would be a force to be reckoned with, Palpatine mused. There are several things I would like to do myself, but I find my hands are full representing the sector away from home. If the queen has her way, you won't have to wait very long, Panaka said. He realized that he had been talking about the summit for quite some time, and that Palpatine was a busy person. I'm sorry, Senator. Was there a reason you called? No, not really, Palpatine said. Just taking a moment to check in with an old friend. I am glad I contacted you, though. Such unexpected and thrilling news from home. Panaka yawned, not quite able to hide it behind his glove. He'd called up extra guards, but he had still been awake for most of the time since the delegates had arrived. I won't keep you from your rest, Captain, Palpatine said. I'm glad everything is going well. Thank you, Senator, Panaka said. And Palpatine ended the call. Darth Sidious considered his options. The events in the Chamal sector were completely unexpected. He hadn't thought that Queen Amidala could muster that sort of achievement in the short time since her election. It would be the last time he underestimated her. Even if she succeeded in uniting the system, he could still play it to his advantage. Ore traders and Silpath hunters were no more a match for the dark side than Amidala was herself. He would have to move his timeline along, though. No more dallying on the Senate floor waiting for bills to pass. He would move the pieces directly. And if it cost him a few pawns in the process, well, he had plenty more where those came from. It was time for the Trade Federation to cease their training maneuvers, move their invasion force out of the wilds of Geonosis, and go to work. Chapter 13. Sabe did not return to the suite with the Queen when she left the throne room on the second day of the summit. There was no formal dinner that night, so no one needed to prepare for anything. Padme was looking forward to a quiet evening in her sitting room, discussing everyone's impressions of the day's talks. Sabe's absence didn't prevent her from dressing in more comfortable handmaiden-style robes and settling in with her tea, but Padme found quickly that she missed her company. The others tried to distract her. It was almost half an hour before Sabe let herself in. She was a bit breathless, like she'd walked quickly to come back to the room. Or maybe for another reason, but that was none of Padme's business. Did you get lost in the corridors? Rabe asked sweetly. Shut up, Sabe said. She looked to Padme for support, but Padme refused to meet her gaze. It's very good of you to pay so much attention to relations, Erte said. Yane blushed, and Sashay looked uncomfortable. She'd been fighting a stomach ache all day, and wasn't in the mood for high spirits. You want to be nice to me, Sabe said. I have an opportunity for us. That got everyone's attention. Neurotransmitter Affection are playing in the Theed Odeon tonight, Sabe said. One of Harley's cousins sings backup with them, so she can get us in. Erte made an unintelligible noise of excitement, and Yane clapped a hand over her mouth. Harley Jaffin invited us to a concert? Padme asked. Well, sort of, Sabe said. She invited me, unofficially. But she said the rest of us could come, too. I imagine she meant the handmaidens, not the queen, but there's no reason why Palace Page can't tag along. Out of the question, Padme said. There's no way we'd even make it out the door, much less out of the palace. Don't be so quick to say that, Rabe said. We haven't even started scheming yet. I am sure we can come up with something. What if there's an emergency? Padme said. Then we'll deal with it, Sabe told her. Unless you don't want to go. It would be much easier to plan without you. That lit a fire under Padme's heart. I am definitely coming with you if you go, she said. I'll stay here if that makes a difference, Sasha said. I don't feel very well anyway, and I've never been a fan of loud noises and crowds. We'll bring you back a souvenir, Sabe promised grandly. Now, suggestions? Padme listened to them plot, feeling strangely disconnected. Yes, neurotransmitter affection were shatteringly popular, but there was no reason to be so reckless as to go and see them. Unless Sabe really did like Harley. If so, Sabe would have to keep secrets from both, and surely that wouldn't be any fun. Unless she ended up liking Harley more. Padme refused to go down that road. There was no reason to be jealous or doubt Sabe's loyalty. They were just going to a concert like normal girls. One night. They could make that work. Rabe shot down four suggestions before they hit on something she thought was feasible. Sabe, Yani, and Erte would go to the concert with Harley, leaving in full view of the guards from the front of the palace. They wouldn't wear handmaiden robes, but they would be dressed as nondescriptly as possible. Meanwhile, Rabe and Padme would go to the Queen's library, ostensibly to do research at Amidala's request. The guards wouldn't bother them, and Rabe would belay Padme down the wall before climbing down herself. How do we get back in? Padme asked. There was no point in a one-way trip. I'll climb the wall and pull you up, Rabe said. It's 5 stories, Yane protested. Do you have a better idea? Rabe said. Yane went over to one of the drawers on the side of the room and rummaged through it for a few minutes. Captain Panaka was annoyed that you wouldn't let him station guards in here, so he took steps, she said. She held up a grappling cable triumphantly. See? Much easier than climbing. He's going to kill us, Padme predicted. But I'm not going to let that stop me. They got dressed. It was fun to do more than one hairstyle, and Padme was glad not to have the usual tight braids under a wig. Erte took the time to curl her hair, since she only rarely got to show it off. Rabe and Padme put on robes over their outfits, Rabe concealing the grappling cable under her skirt. They each took a few credits from Padme's petty cash in case of emergency, and folded them into various pockets. In Sabe's case, her boots. Before they left, they made sure Sasha was as comfortable as possible. She was curled up alone in Padme's bed, feeling desolate and also too wretched to move. If your stomach still hurts in the morning, we'll call a med droid, Yane said, brushing her hair off her face. Sasha didn't flinch away from her, which was new. It can't be food poisoning. You're not throwing up and we all ate the same things. You should get going, Sasha said. I know neurotransmitter affection always have an amazing opening light show. The three obvious concert attendees headed out. Padme could hear them laughing with the guards in the hallway. This was the first time since their arrival at the palace that the handmaidens had worn non-matching outfits, and it might be the first time anyone was able to immediately tell them apart. Rabe made them wait 15 minutes, and then she and Sasha headed for the library.
How come they get to go to the concert and you two get stuck here reading up on ore processing? One of the guards asked when Rabe explained where they were headed.
Oh, we stayed home on purpose, Rabe said. Neither of us really cares for crowds. A quiet night reading is much more our style.
The guard shook her head, but let them pass with no further questioning. Padme kept her head down and hoped no one noticed that she was a solid 5 centimeters taller than Sasha was. Once they were in the library, Rabe stripped off her handmaiden robes and folded them roughly. Padme followed a bit more slowly, also placing her robes on a chair in the corner of the room. Rabe opened the window and fired the cable up into the lintel.
"That will hold us both," she said. "You'll have to step on the ledge and put your arms around me, and then I'll lower us down."
"I thought you made and sold forgeries," Padme said. "How do you know how to do all of this?"
"Well, you can't forge something if you haven't seen it," Rabe said.
Padme hadn't thought of it that way. She stepped up onto the ledge beside the ex-art thief and put her arms around her waist.
"Step with me on three," Rabe said. "One, two, three!"
Padme leaned into her and took that first step into thin air. For a second, she was falling, and then the cable caught them. Rabe lowered them to the ground and pushed the retraction button. The cable detached and disappeared, and then Rabe stashed the grappler under a convenient shrub. She led the way through the gardens, whispering directions about how to make sure they stayed in the security system's blind spots. A quick scramble got her to the top of the garden wall, and she hauled Padme up behind her.
"This is the hard part," Rabe admitted. "When you fall into the dry moat, make sure you bend your knees on the landing. And for the love of Joggenfruit, don't bite your tongue."
Rabe slid to the edge of the wall and let herself down. Even hanging from her fingertips, she was a considerable distance from the ground. She rolled on the landing and came up quickly, brushing loose grass from her hands. Padme did her best to duplicate the move, without the roll, and managed to knock the wind out of her chest when she landed. She sat gasping for a few moments, and then Rabe pulled her to her feet.
"Please teach me how to do that your way," she said when she had enough breath to speak.
"I'll put it on the list," Rabe said, grinning. "You did pretty well, though."
"Thanks," said Padme.
The two girls hurried off. They were supposed to meet the others at the VIP entrance to the Odeon, and they didn't want to keep them waiting. It wasn't a long distance to cover, and there was a crowd to blend in with as soon as they reached the main thoroughfare. Padme smiled in spite of her aching chest. She hadn't been around this many people in so long, and she had missed it. Sabe waved them down by the entrance and introduced Padme to Harley, as a page that Rabe had stayed behind to escort.
"The more the merrier," Harley said. "Come on, let's go see what seats my cousin got for us."
The seats were very close, and they weren't so much seats as they were places in the VIP dance area. This was entirely more than Yane had bargained for, and she was quite happy to stand at the edge of the dance floor and watch the stage. Erte was deeply interested in the lighting design, and had no wish to dance either. Rabe claimed to have two left feet, which Padme highly doubted was true, but didn't care enough about to argue. Harley pulled Sabe out to dance as soon as the opening light show was over. The performers stepped into anti-grav columns as the music changed and began to dance to the ironically titled Get Down, while the audience did its best to emulate them on the floor. Sabe and Harley moved well together, and Padme almost forgot to watch the band. She didn't like this feeling. She didn't think it was jealousy. Not entirely, anyway. Before Harley had come, Padme had known where she and Sabe stood. Sabe was the first of her handmaidens, the one who was the best at doubling for her, and who would take the risks if there was any danger. And right now, Padme didn't know how Sabe felt about any of those things anymore. She should just ask. If they were normal girls, she would just ask. It was like those first few weeks when none of them had complained and just got more and more annoyed with each other. But they weren't normal, and while Padme could ask as Sabe's friend, she wasn't sure if she should ask as Sabe's queen. No, she would have to wait for Sabe to come to her, and she didn't like that one bit. The song changed, the tempo altering slightly but not lessening much as the solid sonic energy beams reinforced the beat. The lights all changed color, and the crowd cheered as the stage was framed in streams of bright Naboo plasma. Sabe came over and grabbed Padme by the hand, pulling her into the dancers. They moved together, and for a moment everything was the way it was supposed to be. Then Harley appeared at her elbow with a bunch of iridescent bulbs in her hands.
"They're glitterlets," she said, yelling to make herself heard over the crowd. "Each section of the audience has a different frequency activation. I got some for all of us."
Harley shook the lids to mix the chemicals together. She snapped one and handed it to Sabe. The main lights went out, and the Odeon thrummed with sound and color. But when Harley snapped the second one for Padme, it broke and covered Padme with glittering liquid that glowed in the dark.
"I'm so sorry," Harley yelled. "But now at least you don't have to worry about holding on to anything."
Padme tried to brush the liquid off her face and only succeeded in making a mess of her hands. Yane appeared with a scarf and a bottle of water, but even that wasn't enough to get rid of the stains entirely.
"We'll have to deal with it at home," Yane said directly into her ear. "Do you want to leave?"
"No," Padme said. "We're all in this together, and I'm not going to ruin the night for everyone."
Yane looked concerned, so Padme smiled brightly, and they both turned back to the show. Every time Padme caught sight of Sabe for the rest of the night, she was laughing.
Chapter 14.
Panaka managed to have dinner with his wife for the first time in days. They squeezed it in right before she had to go on shift, and he wasn't able to do anything special on short notice, but at least they got to see each other. He told her as much as he could about the talks. The public transcript wouldn't be available for a few more days, but even working nights, Mariak was bound to hear something via the palace gossip chain, and Panaka would rather she hear it from him. They were just about to dig into the denta bean buns the kitchen had baked for the first day of the summit when Panaka's comm chimed, with an alert he'd only ever heard once before. After the queen had refused to allow guards into her personal rooms, Panaka had taken some security measures he hadn't told her about. There was a weapons cache in the window seat, for example, which included a variety of things that would help the queen escape or fight back if the occasion called for it. There were several sensors that could detect a perimeter breach, and several more for various types of weapons discharge. There was also a sensor that the queen did know about, because one time, Erte had set it off when she was sewing and had pricked her finger with a needle. It was that alarm that was sounding right now, the one that detected blood. Mariek was on her feet before her husband was. She was already dressed for work, except for her jacket. She didn't stop for that as they headed for the door. Panaka didn't even stop for his shoes. She grabbed his shoulder as soon as they were in the barracks courtyard.
"Do not run," she whispered.
"I know," he muttered through gritted teeth.
It was not as if anyone who saw him dressed like this would fail to be alarmed, but they had guests, and running through the palace corridors would attract too much attention. Padme had the girls with her. He could be a professional. They walked as quickly as they could. The hallway outside the queen's suite was quiet. The four guards on duty were standing at their posts. They jumped to attention when Panaka appeared, and when they saw his dishabille, they went on alert. Panaka didn't stop to talk to them. He opened the door to the suite. The rooms were empty and dark. Only a low light was on near the hearth. It was oddly calming, and Panaka did not wish to be calm. He had one priority, and that was Amidala. He crashed into her bedroom, and the girl in the bed sat up and screamed. Mariek followed Panaka into the queen's bedroom. They both froze in their tracks at the scream, and Mariek turned to bring up the lights. In the center of the bed was Sasha. She was pale and gasping for breath. They had scared her.
"Where is she?" Panaka roared.
Sasha flinched back. She blinked, trying to wake up as quickly as she could. Mariek put a hand on his shoulder.
"Let me do this one, love," she said. "Go, and tell the guards in the hallway that there is no emergency."
Panaka obviously thought there was an emergency, given that the queen was clearly not in her room. But he went anyway. Mariak sat down on the edge of the bed. "He's upset because the alarm called him away from a fresh denta bean bun," she said. Sasha laughed at the idea that Captain Panaka ever chose dessert over duty.
"It was the blood alarm. And I don't think it was a sewing accident this time."
Sasha looked puzzled for a moment, and then connected the line between her cramps and the alarm. She looked under the covers and her face turned bright red.
"We keep the absorption pads in the bathroom," she said quietly,
hoping the bed would swallow her whole. The instructions are on the package. I can figure it out.
I'll take care of the laundry, Mariak said.
Panaka was waiting for her in the hallway. He looked at the sheet she was carrying, considerably perplexed.
Where do they keep their clothing? She asked, as though everything was fine.
What is going on? Where is the queen? He demanded.
I haven't gotten that far yet, Mariak said. You scared that poor girl half to death, and then mortification nearly took her the rest of the way. Just give us a few minutes.
Panaka watched while Mariak deposited the laundry and retrieved a clean set of bedding. She shuffled through the wardrobe registry until she found Sashay's things and called up fresh sleeping clothes for her. Then she carried them back into the queen's bedroom. Panaka was on his last nerve.
I'm assuming she's not injured, at least, he asked.
She's fine, Mariak said. And you're an idiot for putting a blood-sensitive sensor in the bedroom of a teenage girl.
Panaka made several connections simultaneously and had the decency to look guilty about it.
It's never gone off before, he muttered.
The older girls probably take suppressants, Mariak said. You know, like literally every guard who cycles. We're busy people, Quash.
I'll apologize for scaring her, he said. As soon as she tells me where the queen is.
Sashay came out a few minutes later. She was wrapped in a housecoat and looked incredibly embarrassed. She stared at Panaka's boots.
There's a concert at the Odeon, she said unprompted. That's where they went.
How did they get out? Panaka demanded.
Sabe, Yane, and Erte left with Harley earlier, Sashay paused. She didn't want to give up a secret, but there wasn't any way around it.
Rabe and Padme left from the library.
The library, Panaka said, extremely calm, is on the fifth level of the palace.
Yane found the grappling cable weeks ago, Sashay said, gesturing to the window seat. They used that.
Mariak made a noise suspiciously like a snort, and Panaka put his face in his hands.
This is what we are going to do, he said after taking a moment to think about it. We're not going to cause a scene. You're going to call the queen and tell her to come home. She's going to come back the way she left so we don't make a spectacle of it.
Okay,
Sashay said quietly.
How is she disguised? Mariak asked as the thought occurred.
If they're with Harley Jaffin, she must have taken some precautions.
They went as themselves, Sashay said. No one knows who they are. Tonight, they're just girls.
Call her. Right now, Panaka said.
Sashay fished the device out of her pocket and held it on her palm.
At least the night couldn't get much worse.
Padme had her comlink in her pocket. She'd set the vibration as high as possible. There was no way she'd hear it over the noise of the concert, but she might be able to feel it. She wasn't really expecting anyone to contact her, but when the comlink shook against her leg, she knew there was only one person it could be. She activated the device, and a miniature Sashay appeared on her palm. Padme couldn't hear over the noise of the concert, but Sashay spoke clearly enough for Padme to read her lips.
Come home, she said. We're blown.
Well, this was going to be fun.
Padme got Rabe's attention. Rabe understood the situation immediately and went to corral the others. Sabe was still on the dance floor with Harley, so they didn't interrupt her. Padme and I will go back, Rabe said when Padme had caught them all up on the situation. You two wait for Sabe and come back with her. The trip back to the palace wasn't nearly as exciting as the escape had been. Panaka was giving them a chance to preserve their dignity and the queen's cover, and Rabe didn't waste it. She retrieved the grappling cable and got them through the window with no issues. They put their handmaiden robes back on and then went out to face the music. The guards in the hallway were carefully neutral. None of them was exactly sure what was going on, and Padme appreciated their discretion in not trying to find out now. Rabe opened the door to the suite, and they went in.
We're in the sitting room, Sashay called.
Padme took a moment to pull herself together.
Do not let him run over you, Rabe said under her breath.
I won't let him run over us, Padme replied.
When she went into the sitting room, she was dressed as a handmaiden, but she was Queen Amidala to her fingertips. Rabe followed a few steps behind, as though this were a normal walk in the palace, and instead of sitting down, she took a place behind Padme.
I don't even know where to start, Panaka said.
He had gone through the heat of his anger and settled into a cold rage. He was doing everything he could to keep her safe, and she had all but thrown it in his face.
We were given the opportunity to strengthen ties with the Jafani delegation, Padme said. I considered it an appropriate risk.
Don't give me that, Your Highness. Panaka clung to his manners to keep from yelling at her.
You could have done that in the palace. You could have invited any entertainment you wanted. And instead, you slipped your guards, climbed 5 stories down, somehow got over the garden wall, and went out with no security at all.
Captain Panaka, you know that's not true, Padme said. You've trained my bodyguards yourself. She used the word quite deliberately.
It's not the same thing, Panaka said.
Yes, it is, Padme said. For the first time, she unleashed the full brunt of her emotions on him. Anger and frustration, and a determination so solid it would break rocks.
That was the whole point. They gave up their families, and their names, and their reputations, and they did it willingly, because they believe in your idea of what we could be. You trained us, and gave us the ability to defend ourselves. We have worked to become a fluid, adaptable group, and we are powerful, Captain. Even if it's not the kind of power you are accustomed to.
Panaka sat back in surprise, and there was dead quiet for several moments.
You are going to do things I don't like, Captain, Padme said. And I am going to do things you don't like. But at the end of the day, one of us was elected Queen of Naboo, and I will do my job the way I see fit. I will listen to your advice, the same way I listen to everyone. But sometimes I will act against what you've said, and you will have to do your job and protect me anyway.
How can I protect you if I don't know where you are? He asked.
You gave me 5 protectors, Padme said. You'll have to trust them, too.
Panaka looked over her shoulder at Rabe, the girl he thought he could control. Her flat stare told him everything he needed to know. This was not a fight he would win.
I understand, Your Highness, Panaka said. Next time you want to go on an adventure, tell me first. I'll do everything I can to make it happen.
I appreciate your dedication, Captain. She let him hear the affection now, and the respect, since he'd gotten the negative emotions earlier.
I'm late for my shift, Mariak said, admirably diffusing the tension. And Sashay probably wants to go back to bed.
She pulled her husband to his feet, and they took their leave. Rabe sat down and put her feet up on the little table.
I ruined a bedsheet, said Sashay, as though it made perfect sense. And you're covered in glitter.
It was probably the adrenaline wearing off, but Padme laughed until she cried.
Chapter 15. The glitter did not come off. Yane tried everything she could think of to wash Padme's hands, but nothing worked. Erte ran an analysis of the chemicals and tried to come up with a cleanser that wouldn't dissolve Padme's skin off her bones. But so far, she wasn't having any luck.
Just try the makeup over it, Rabe suggested. Yane went to work, but it was no use. The makeup they used as a concealer worked fine on Padme's face, but cracked every time she moved her fingers. Yane tried a lighter application, but that wasn't enough to cover the glitter.
It's daylight, Sashay protested. How is it still glowing?
It's a secret recipe, Erte told her. I had to slice into the manufacturer's database to find the ingredients.
You can't go out like this, Yane said. Harley will recognize you immediately.
Gloves? Rabe suggested. Not with a representative from Kreeling here, Yane told her. It's not a rule exactly, but it is a cultural guideline we should follow if we want to maintain our friendliness with Tobruna. There was a whole moment where none of them panicked. It'll have to be Sabe then, Erte said. She's the only one who ever doubled for you in public, and her voice is the best. There will be quite a bit of speaking today. Sabe looked up from where she was untangling strands of beads on one of the queen's more ridiculous headpieces. What? She said.
Erte's right, Padme agreed. You'll have to be the queen today. And I'll watch the proceedings from the Whisper Gallery as a page. If I keep my hands in my sleeves, no one will see.
This isn't tricking the guards or taking your place in a parade, Sabe said. This is actual business, with serious ramifications.
I am aware, Padme said. Her voice was a little cold. I knew when we went to the concert that there might be consequences, and here we are. Today, you're the queen.
It served as a declaration, and the girls got to work. Padme and Sabe switched seats. The day's gown was quite formal. The rich burgundy was offset by light gray accents, and the headpiece was again the traditional fan shape. Rabe and Yane, who would accompany the queen to the throne room, were in flame orange once more. It was quickly becoming their accepted color, and somehow the vibrancy of the fabric helped them to disappear. Sasha helped Padme and Erte into the muted blue and mercifully wide-sleeved robes, and they all secured their hoods.
Thank goodness for fashion trends, Padme said. Would you believe me if I said I wasn't surprised? Yane asked.
Yes, Padme said, and meant it with her entire soul.
I would.
Sabe came over while Padme was putting on the makeup that obscured her appearance.
I'm sorry, she said.
It's not your fault that the lit broke, Padme told her. It's my fault you were there, Sabe said.
I make my own choices, Your Highness, Padme said. You know that.
It sounded like they were talking it through, but Padme had a feeling she'd only made it worse. There was no time for anything else, though. They all had places to be. The Whisper Gallery was nearly full. The Legislative Assembly had stopped viewing the summit as a vanity project shortly after the first public transcript was released. Response from the general populace had been favorable, and now the elected officials were curious to see how everything turned out. Padme and the others had seats in the reserved section as pages, which also meant anyone who needed a message run would call on them. 2 hours into closing talks, a representative caught Padme's eye. There was no way she could pass the message to Sasha or Erte without raising eyebrows. So she got up and went to see what the message was.
Please take this to the kitchen, the representative said. We're leaving earlier than I thought, and I want to make sure the cooks have an accurate count for tonight.
For the first time, Padme wondered why they didn't have a mechanized system for this sort of thing. It would not be difficult to send a brief message via comm, and while Padme was perfectly capable of walking it down, she really didn't want to miss the summit. So much of Naboo's government was like that. A set of traditions that worked like Republic credits. Valuable only because everyone had already agreed what they were worth. But that meant there were weak points to be exploited, and no defense against them. If Padme didn't deliver the message, there would be an incorrect number of chairs at dinner. It wasn't a huge problem, but she was starting to wonder how else the system could be pushed. Padme committed the representative's message to memory, and then exited the Whisper Gallery. She would come back as soon as she could. Since she was out of earshot, she was unaware that shortly after she left, Queen Amidala had called a brief recess, and she likewise hadn't seen Harley Jaffin quietly excuse herself from the throne room. Padme was on her way back from the kitchen when she got caught.
There you are, said Harley, behind her and much too close. When I didn't see you with the Queen this morning, I thought I was going to miss you entirely.
Padme froze. She was wearing her own face, though her hood and the makeup obscured most of it. And this girl had come the closest of anyone so far to seeing through the Queen's disguise. She had counted the number of handmaidens in the room and realized Sabe wasn't among them. No one would think to look at the Queen, of course. But another robed girl in the palace corridor
who was the same height, was a logical guess. Particularly when that girl had deliberately taught herself to move the same way.
I had a different job today.
Padme spoke as quietly as possible. Rabe said that quiet voices were easier to mistake. The queen's voice had to be loud, so it required the most work. She turned so that she was half-facing Harley, but kept her head down and her hood low.
I just wanted to tell you that I had an amazing time last night, Harley said. I thought at first hanging out with your friends might spoil the mood, but they were so much fun, too.
It was a good concert, Padme said. She had never felt so exposed in her entire life.
Are you okay? Harley asked. Did you get in trouble?
Captain Panaka is a worrier, Padme admitted.
Harley laughed, and then reached out and took Padme's elbows. She moved too fast for Padme to dodge, and pulled her a little too close.
Look, I'm not very good at this, and I know we literally live on different planets, but I like you a lot, Harley said.
Padme's heart raced, and not in the way Harley probably intended.
I don't know that much about Naboo dating culture, but I would like to kiss you before I go.
Oh, no, Padme said. It was reflexive, and absolute, and cruel. She regretted it immediately, but couldn't think of anything else to do. She pulled away.
Oh, said Harley. She sounded surprised. You won't even look at me today.
I'm sorry, Padme said. I'm delivering an important message. She fled, leaving Harley standing alone in the corridor and wondering what had just happened. The rest of the summit closing passed without incident, though Harley spoke very little. The Queen presided over a farewell tea directly after the final session, and then each delegate took their formal leave. They would be departing the following morning, but this was to be the last official event. The handmaidens returned to the suite and prepared to spend the evening relaxing after a busy week. The decoy maneuver had, as far as most of them knew, gone without a hitch, and they were all in the mood to celebrate. Sabe didn't get a chance to check her personal comlink or talk privately to the others until late in the evening. Yane had taken care of her undressing, and the others had gone to bed. Sabe could tell that Padme had something she wanted to discuss, and assumed it was merely that the Queen wished to evaluate her performance that afternoon. When she finally had a moment to herself, Sabe read a note from Harley, with confusion that quickly changed into anger when she realized what must have happened. She went into Padme's room. Sashe was tucked under the covers, but Padme was still reading.
I got the strangest message from Harley Jaffin just now, Sabe said acidly. And frankly, I'm surprised I didn't get even a slight heads up from you.
Padme stilled. She set the documents down and gave Sabe her full attention.
It seems she tried to say goodbye to me this afternoon, Sabe continued. Her rage simmered in her.
Sashe was awake but unmoving.
And I was very rude.
Harley had used much more colorful language.
She surprised me, Padme said.
Her calm was completely infuriating, not because of her control, but because Sabe knew she was tailoring her deportment to Sabe's response. She hated being handled.
I wasn't expecting to be mistaken for you. It was supposed to work the other way around.
And so you had to be awful about it? Sabe said. You can charm a whole planet into loving you, but you can't take 2 seconds to consider her feelings.
Should I have let her kiss me? Padme said.
Her tone grew heated.
Do you think she still would have thought I was you then? Don't you think she might have recognized me from the concert, since I'm still covered in glitter?
I don't know, shouted Sabe. She was aware the others were standing behind her, and modulated her tone so that the guards wouldn't come bursting in.
I just thought for 1 second you might have been able to think of someone besides yourself.
There was nothing she could have said to hurt Padme more, and she knew it.
I tried, Sabe, Padme said after a horrible silence. I saw that you liked her, and I didn't know what that meant. If I were only your friend, I could just ask you. But I'm your queen, too. I can't order you to tell me about your personal life, can I? I had to trust that you would come to me and tell me what I needed to know.
And you didn't.
Did you think I would give up secrets? Sabe asked. Do you really think so little of me?
No, Padme said. I think the world of you. But it's harder than I thought to be your friend and your ruler all at the same time. And I can't do that if you don't help me.
Sabe sat down on the bed. The others came in and joined them, Sasha pulling her legs up to make more room on her side.
You wanted a normal night, Padme said. And I tried to give it to you. I thought that meant Paige me could come with you. But I think it might be better if we avoided that from now on.
I was sad enough that Sasha missed the concert, Sabe admitted. If you hadn't come either, it would hardly have been worth it.
I thought you wanted to spend more time with Harley, Padme said.
I did, Sabe said. She's the first person who's ever liked me for being me. But that doesn't mean I didn't want to spend time with all of you, too. Outside of this damn room.
Well, we probably can't use the library as a way out anymore, Rabe said lightly.
I think Panaka might be onto us.
Sabe giggled in spite of herself.
They hadn't really solved anything. But at least they had identified the problem.
That was a place to start.
You can go if you want, Padme said. I don't know what you'd say, but you can have the night off.
Sabe was grateful for the offer, but it was too late. And Harley had as much as said she didn't want to see her again.
No, she said. What's done is done.
I am sorry, Padme said. It was all she could do, and it was not enough.
Sasha, would you switch with me tonight? Sabe asked.
She half expected her to refuse. It would mean sharing with Yane.
Just this once, Sasha said quietly.
Yane looked down at her hands. Tonight was going to be deeply uncomfortable for everyone, apparently.
Thank you, Sabe said. She knew it was important not to fall asleep angry with Padme, however much she might want to. She didn't want to talk about it, but maybe if they were in the same room, everything would work itself out on its own.
Maybe we should go to the lake house now that the summit is done, Padme said.
It's early in my reign to go on a retreat, but I feel like we've accomplished a lot this week and could use a break.
I'll look into it tomorrow, Yane said. She yawned.
Mid-afternoon at the earliest.
Everyone left, and Sabe crawled into the spot Sasha had vacated.
Did you really want to kiss her? Padme asked.
Sabe knew what she was doing, and why she was doing it, but she couldn't bring herself to mend the fence. She could do her job, but that was it for now.
Not yet, please, she said. I just want to talk about politics.
Padme dutifully changed the subject. Bravery. The loom made her feel better. There were several different mechanized versions to choose from. Looms that did all of the work, and looms that let you maintain some semblance of control. But Suyan liked the manual ones the best. Without a computer to tell her if the tension was right, she had to pay close attention, and she liked the way the world closed in around her as she wove. It shut out the bustle of the market, for starters. And sometimes that level of noise could be aggravating. It was blankets today, simple enough, but Suyan was taking her time. Each one had a different design. They were all headed to the Theed Hospital eventually, but that was no reason not to enjoy the process. Suyan loved watching the fabric grow under her fingers as she built it out of yarn, and she never got tired of the ways she could use color to tell whatever story she wanted in the weft.
Are these all yours? Someone asked.
Suyan paused and looked up. She needed her eyes to weave, and she didn't entirely appreciate the interruption. It was late in the day, and she'd already made several good sales. She wanted to finish this blanket and cut it free before it got dark.
I made them, yes, she said. They're for the hospital.
They're very nice.
The speaker was a tall man with brown skin and square shoulders.
What are they made of?
It's a yarn I make myself, Suyan told him. I spin it from various components, and the end result is a blanket that is light, warm, moisture-wicking.
If he noticed that she didn't give up any of the particulars,
He paid the courtesy of respecting her ownership. Some people tried to get her to reveal the combinations, and though she didn't mind sharing, she wasn't going to give them up to just anyone.
"Can you make fabric for other situations?" he asked. "Waterproof or fireproof, maybe?"
"Yes," Suyan said, without considering it for very long. She was young to be a master weaver, and she didn't have the official designation yet, but it was only a matter of time. She knew the extent of her talents. But I am not sure how practical that would be in a blanket at the hospital. They have other methods of fire suppression.
"I wasn't talking about just blankets," he said.
He was still feeling the fabric, and she could tell by his touch that he didn't actually know the quality of the craft at all. She had no problem with people appreciating things because they were pretty or soft, but his questions didn't link up with his behavior.
"Can you only make heavy yarn do what you want?"
"The bulk makes it easier," she admitted. "But not everything has to be in the weave. There are resins that can be used to treat fabrics and still maintain their flexibility. And you could probably do a lot with embroidery, if you had the right sort of thread." He considered it for a moment, and she thought he would keep walking. Instead, he returned to the red blanket she had finished that morning and hung up to make sure the blocking was all right.
"Do you always work here?" he asked,
indicating the market in general. "Sometimes I work at home," Suyan said.
"Sorry," he said. "I mean, are you always a weaver?"
"No," she said. "I have to spin my yarn, as I said, and I also dye it myself most of the time."
"Is that all you've ever wanted to do?"
It was an oddly direct question, and Suyan considered her answer before she gave it. "Yes," she said. "I'm happy."
"Would you consider another job if it became available?" he asked.
"Nothing ever has," Suyan said. He looked straight at her, no longer running his hands along the blanket weave.
"It would be at the palace," he said. "There would be a lot of people. You wouldn't have very much time to yourself. It might be dangerous, and it's very important."
Suyan rested her hands on the top of the loom, letting the shuttles go and taking her feet off the pedals. She realized that whoever this man was, he definitely hadn't found her by accident. He hadn't been walking in the market and been attracted by the bright colors of her stall. He had known she would be here. He knew what she did. He had come here to ask her these questions, even though he knew most of the answers already. And he had done all of it on purpose. "I'm a weaver," she said.
"You're an artist," he replied.
It was a common designation on Naboo, but the way he said it gave it more weight than she was used to.
"You have a very interesting skill set, and I am very interested in seeing you realize its full potential."
"Weavers don't usually have dangerous jobs," she said. "Even dyeing cloth, which had been hot, heavy work before automation, was relatively safe, as long as you didn't do anything stupid."
"There's another part to it," he admitted. "You'd be responsible for the well-being of a high-ranking official, and I would expect you to use all of your skills to protect her."
"Your royal security," she said, narrowing her eyes at him.
"Captain Quash Panaka," he introduced himself. "I'm head of Queen Amidala's guard detail."
The thing about weaving blankets for the hospital was that Suyan got the feeling of having done something good without really extending herself. Yes, it was fun to do the work, and yes, she enjoyed coming up with new fabric blends, but the truth was that she mostly did it because it made her comfortable. What Captain Panaka was describing sounded terrifying. Suyan did not have to be told the power of a good weave, a good thread, a good seam. She already knew those things. If anything, she wasn't used to that power being acknowledged. She was less sure that she, Suyan, would be any good at protecting someone. "All right," she heard herself say. "I'm in." Chapter 16. Queen Amidala spent the morning on the landing platform, waving decorously as her guests departed. She was accompanied by a single handmaiden, with a handful of guards. No one would have guessed it by looking at her, but Padme was exhausted. At least the dress was doing most of the work for her, in terms of standing up straight. Hinata was squinting up at the sky, a puzzled expression on his face.
"Captain," said the Queen.
"We're getting some unexpected feedback on the outer signal buoys," he said. "Who is left?"
"Just Governor Kelma," Sasha said. "She volunteered to go last because she has the least hyperlag to worry about."
"I'm going to call her pilot and tell them to get a move on," Panaka said. "We're going to have to send some of our own ships out to check on the buoys."
"As you say, Captain," Padme said. The Carlini ship took off the moment its pre-flight checks were done. The comlink was still open, and as the ship cleared orbit, Padme heard someone very clearly.
"What the hell?"
was all that was discernible before the ship was out of range, but it was enough to raise Panaka's hackles even further.
"I'd like you to go back to the palace, Your Highness," he said.
Padme did not consider arguing. Sasha had her comlink out and sent a short message to the others, who were hopefully still in the suite. They had dressed Padme in another formal gown this morning, one that would be visible from a ship while she stood on the landing pad. The gown was red with a wide skirt, an elaborate tabard that covered her shoulders and chest. Around the skirt was a ring of luminescent orange and yellow globes. It wasn't exactly a dress to move quickly in, but Padme managed, even on the steps. At the door to the palace, Padme stopped and turned to one of the guards.
"Would you please find Governor Bibble and ask him to come to the throne room?" she asked. Tradition or no, she was going to update the messaging system. "Captain Panaka has a report to give."
The wording was deceptively light, and Padme could see that the guard understood her immediately. She set off at a trot, and Padme continued toward the throne room. She had a bad feeling. The personal comms in the Queen's suite all went off at the same time, which would have been alarming on its own. Four miniature versions of Sasha appeared on four palms, and immediately their attention was riveted.
"Flame,"
was the only thing she said before she disappeared. It was one of the first codes they had devised. Rather than have a single word that would call them all to action in case of an emergency, they had a few different ones to help indicate what sort of emergency it was. The color of the robe Sasha had been wearing that morning, the ombre orange to yellow, in this case, meant that they all needed to appear as handmaidens in the throne room as soon as humanly possible. They didn't bother to braid their hair. Instead, robes were thrown on and pulled straight, and everyone was left to tuck her hair in as best she could. Sabe led the way through the corridors at a fast walk. No one else seemed to be responding, so Amidala still required their discretion. They reached the throne room doors and saw the Queen was already sitting, with Sasha at her side. The rest of them hurried to their places.
"Governor Bibble, thank you,"
Amidala was saying as the governor entered from the other side of the room. "We know you meant to depart this morning, but Captain Panaka wished you to be present."
"Of course, Your Highness."
Bibble was too practiced a politician to show his annoyance openly, but he could hardly be blamed for wanting to be elsewhere. He'd had a long week, too.
"Your Highness, Governor Bibble."
Panaka strode into the room, his boots ringing on the marble, and stood in the center of the floor.
"Just as Governor Kelma's ship was leaving orbit, our external buoys were buzzed by a small craft of unknown design. We assumed they scanned us for planetary defenses, but everyone knows we have none. We do not know..."
A hollow blurred over him, and he stepped aside to let the image clear. Even though he knew the person wasn't really there, he couldn't help reaching for his blaster.
"Your Highness," said the figure, "I am Viceroy Newt Gunray of the Trade Federation. I require you to sign a treaty."
"Viceroy, this is highly unorthodox," Amidala said. "We are not in the habit of signing treaties with people we have only just met."
"Nevertheless, you will sign this one," Gunray said. "It is being delivered to you as we speak."
Sabe went to the console and nodded. Whatever document the Viceroy meant had appeared in the Queen's database. Her hand hovered over the disconnect switch, but she waited for the signal.
"We will have it added to our schedule," Amidala said, "and contact you in due time when full consideration has been given."
"You will sign it," Gunray said, "or you will suffer."
He disappeared.
"Your Highness," began Panaka, but Padme held up her hand.
"Captain," she said,
"please ready your guards and the rest of the security forces. I know we do not have much in the way of planetary defense, but I will not sit idly by until we have determined what this Viceroy Gunray is after."
"Governor," she turned to Bibble,
"I am sorry, but I will need you to stay in the palace for a bit longer."
"It won't be a real treaty," Bibble said. "They expect you to capitulate without a fight."
"They expect incorrectly," Padme said. "But there may be hints in the document as to what their game is. I recommend you and your staff read quickly."
"I will make arrangements," he said.
He stood to go, but Padme raised her hand again to stop him.
"Governor, who on Naboo is empowered to sign treaties with off-worlders?" she asked. "I must confess, I am unfamiliar with the exact chain of precedence, and I would like that clarified as soon as possible."
"The Queen is the only person with that power," Bibble told her.
"And if the Queen is absent or incapacitated,
they must wait for her recovery or return.
And if the Queen is dead,"
she didn't flinch,
"then there must be..."